Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. I wish I was there. Let's see. A UW Ag scientist holds a seminar up north on hemp 101 as Wisconsin farmers increasingly look, on growing that now legal commodity. And the governor said, let's change state law to cover pre-existing conditions. The welfare reform debate begins in the Capitol, and U.S. Senate Republican Kevin Nicholson says, I'll keep answering questions about when I was a Democrat, but, quote, I would like to get beyond it. Wish I was there.
I was at the Organic Grains Conference this weekend in Madison, and there was a lot of talk and interest around how you grow hemp in Wisconsin. I think one thing we have in our favor is that we know historically we've been able to do quite well growing hemp in Wisconsin. And there are many strains of cannabis sativa now that meet the legal definition of industrial hemp at 0.3% dry weight of THC content.
The poverty rate is consistent, even though we've tried to throw a ton of money at it, we've got a ton of programs, it's not moving. The one thing that actually moves it is when people get back to work. And unfortunately, one of the results of a lot of the government programs have been the robbing of a person's purpose. Our goal as we started out on this endeavor was to figure out how to reconnect people with purpose.
What I've heard today so far is I would hope that each of you, before you run out the door to vote, get more information. It is clear to us sitting here that you don't have enough information yet to be legislating these things. So do we as a state want to go down the road of requiring voter ID and drug testing for recipients of our state funds?
Let's just make it crystal clear. Let's set in the state statutes a crystal clear requirement that no matter what happens in the future in Washington, no matter what changes they make or don't make to the Affordable Care Act, that in the state of Wisconsin going forward, pre-existing conditions will be covered so that we don't ever have to worry.
I think the commission does need to move ahead, and the legislature needs to move ahead and get beyond complaints that it has had about the GAB, whether they're real or imagined.
Assembly Bill 710 provides consistency and punishment for those who steal by making penalties for someone who intentionally frauds the unemployment insurance system to match the penalties in the statute for theft. Theft is theft, and it makes no sense to have penalties lower if an individual steals from UI benefits or somebody who steals money from a cash register. There were 65,000 folks who roughly frauded out of the system about $86 million.
I appreciate the Democrats and other Republicans will do oppo dumps and all that other kind of stuff because they want to find something to fight about. Sure, whatever. I'll answer these questions. At some point, folks, we got to get beyond it. I'm a Republican. I'm a Republican because I believe it's the most conservative party in America, and I believe conservative policies serve the people of our state and our country best.
Transportation highway funding back in the news, JR.
Yes.
Let's start with the president's state of the state. $1.5 trillion infrastructure package. And without giving any details, states and local governments will have to find some match.
Oh, the majority of the match. It'd be only
the majority of the match? Have you seen those details?
Well, the New York Times had it be $200 billion in state. It's $200 billion in federal money to leverage state, city, and private investments in infrastructure. That includes broadband and things like that.
And airports and bridges and things like that and highways.
Which is why Governor Walker pushed that door up a little bit on the gas tax hike this week.
Yeah, I want to let's land on that. Now, our gas tax hasn't been increased since 2006.
Somewhere on
there,
I think
it's 30.9 cents a gallon. What'd the governor say?
We were asking about the infrastructure package, and he said he'd be open to additional revenues if it's offset by tax cuts somewhere else. Have you heard that before?
Yes. So the overall tax burden has to stay the same.
Or at least go down, preferably.
But if you adjust it up with a gas tax, you have to cut elsewhere?
Mm-hmm. And I pushed him on this several times because if you remember during the 2014, Governor Walker had a similar pitch, right? He opened to a gas tax, like, if it's offset. Well, as you move toward the 17 budget, he said there's no need for a gas tax hike. Some Republicans said, we have a package here that would do that. Now, Walker disputed that that package actually offset the gas tax increase mm-hmm. with other tax cuts. Dale Cayenga does not agree with that assessment. He authored it. His numbers he showed me are that it would have cut taxes overall by $250 million. Now, he took some of Walker's tax cuts to do that. But we're back this debate again about what might pave the way for a gas tax hike. I still talk to folks who have their doubts that Walker will ever sign a gas tax increase. But the reality is the dynamic has changed. In 17, Governor Walker and talked about the reform dividend, how he's got all this money because of the things that he's done to invest in schools,
yes.
to make a, what he called historic investment in infrastructure.
The Act 10 savings.
There wasn't a need, in his words, to do it then. Well, now we have the dynamic of the federal package, which, let's be honest, has to go through Congress. Governor Walker talked about, you know, some major players, quote unquote, in D.C. who yes. know about Wisconsin infrastructure needs. I think Paul Ryan might be on that list. So what comes out of Congress could be much different than what the president's proposed. But if we do have to offer up new money to leverage federal dollars, where's that going to come from? There are only so many levers you can pull, and the gas tax is one of them. Now, again, what's that package going to look like when it's done?
Yes, and when is it going to pass?
Yeah.
Because you and I agree that the governor will not sign a gas tax increase before the November election in which he's seeking a third term. Do we agree with that?
I think that would be very difficult for him to do. I mean, I honestly talk to people who still think there's a very small chance Walker will ever sign a tax hike, period. You know, we've talked before. We all think he's going to run for president again. I mean, I can't say for sure he will, but he noted before he's a very young guy. He's got plenty of time. He could wait several terms before he runs. He'll still be younger than Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton were last cycle.
But connect these dots. The president gives a State of the State speech. He talks about $1.5 trillion. And 2 days later, you have Milwaukee-area Republicans and Chamber of Commerce types saying, hey, here's a bill to revive funding for the East-West Freeway. What's the linkage there?
Well, they're pushing to get that back in line because what happened essentially was the decision of the Walker administration took that probably off the table, period. We asked the governor about that as well this week. He said there are threats of lawsuits in Milwaukee that make him say it's not a priority. He listed some other projects that he wants to do instead. His administration touted the savings that they found and the changes they made have moved up some other projects like 3990.
Mm-hmm.
But 94 East-West, he says, not a priority because of these lawsuits. And he also said that people in Milwaukee would like a break from the construction. Think about the Marquette went on for how many years? Then we had the zoo, which was going on for how many years?
Yeah.
He thinks they might want a break. But these lawmakers are saying, no, we need to get this thing done to make that stretch work better. Yeah. It's also the same age as these interchanges were before they were constructed, and it's crumbling. So either you have to go back and repave it, do patchwork, do something, extend its life, or do it, you know, the full project and knock it out, which is also, by the way, $1 billion.
Oh, yeah. And while we're talking about the governor, he also signaled that he's willing to deal on the $100 per mm-hmm. child credit that he wants mailed out before the November elections. So let's talk about the questions there. Should it be made permanent? Mm-hmm. Do you find a way to send it out before November? Because I think you wrote that the administrative cost of that is like $900,000. And there's another... Who exactly should the...
Should it be refundable?
Yes. Should it go only to people that owed income taxes? And the governor said that he's willing to deal, and we're going to hear that clip in a minute. And Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, basically, it should be changed.
Well, he's got some questions. And what's interesting this week is last week after the State of the State, we talked about this on Friday last week, I heard the most pushback from Republicans about the reinsurance plan that he had. But as they've digested the child credit more, I've heard more grumbling from Republicans of, well, is this what we really want to do? I don't think it helped that Jay Weber, a talk show host in Milwaukee, really hammering on this after it came out. That got Republicans kind of thinking, especially in southeastern Wisconsin, thinking, well, is this really the best thing to do? And their questions are, again, Should it be refundable? Should you have to have a tax burden? I get the impression the governor's willing to deal on this. His main priority right now is to get those checks in people's hands when school starts.
Right.
So if you give him, and that price is a sales tax rebate. If you spend at least $100 on sales taxes in the past, in 2017 and have kids younger than 18 in that year, you would get your $100. I'm pretty sure most people spend $100 on sales tax
right.
in the course of the year.
And this is a time, let's listen to the governor. It's only a one-minute clip talking about that, and he ends with, it's imperative that we send these checks out this year before November. Let's go to that clip of the governor.
For us, it ties right into back to school. This was the quickest, easiest way to get money right back in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers to be able to make it a sales tax rebate that really had a punch, meaning it had an impact on the economy, not only a benefit to families, $100 per child for everyone living at home under the age of 18, but also we believe that timing it so that families will either get it deposited or get a check right before September 1st. And I think the long-term benefit to that is that will almost entirely recycle those dollars back into the state's economy, which means going into next year in the new budget, I believe will help us create another bigger than expected surplus, which will then help us fund our priorities like schools and finding ways to continue to lower property and income taxes for everyone. It is refundable, but we think of tying it in income taxes, and we'd be even open if the legislature so deemed that to tie it directly into taxable liability. The key right now is getting it into people's hands right away before school starts so it can have a positive impact.
The cost of this credit is $122 million that the state has, mm-hmm. but there's kind of a P.S. Go ahead, Jared.
Yeah, it's one more thing I've heard it from Republicans this week is it the best use of state money to impact? Because the impact, it's 671,000 households out of 2.3 million in Wisconsin. So why use that money to affect just a small group? The pushback, though, from Walker backers is, when did Republicans start to oppose tax credits and tax breaks and sending money back to taxpayers? And oh, by the way, the Republican Party's been hemorrhaging who? Suburban, educated women, a lot of whom happen to be moms,
yep.
who happen to get these checks, who happen to think this would be a priority. Hey guys, SD10, ring a bell. I mean, that's kind of the pushback I got from the Walker folks of this is important for a reason.
Yeah, okay. New subject, kind of deja vu all over again, Mr. Stengel's quote. The Elections Commission again voted 4-2 mm-hmm. to not seek hire an interim or advertise nationally, prompting this response from Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. I am concerned that today's decision to delay hiring an administrator will force the legislature to act as is required by state law. I will be reaching out to other Senate leaders to discuss the issue. I urge the commission to reconsider its position and install a new administrator prior to the March 9 deadline. Now, JR, reading the reporting of you and others, Mr. Haas has taken steps to not directly sign off on decisions that could get mm-hmm. him sued. So update us on the second commission vote.
The first vote, there was a discussion about finding a new administrator and doing a national search from Dean Knutson, former lawmaker who actually authored the law
yes.
to break up the old GAB.
We're going to hear from him in a minute.
That was tabled. They took it back up this week. They basically tabled it again until March 2nd. That date's important because March 9th is in this 45-day window. In that 45-day window, if there's a vacancy in this position, the Joint Committee on Legislative Organization can step in and appoint somebody under the law. Now, there's obviously a dispute between some Republicans in the Capitol and the commission about if that position is vacant. DOA also says that appointment was illegitimate. They don't recognize it. So there, to them, there's a vacancy. And if they don't act, then JCLO could step in, appoint somebody. And then what do we have? Mike Haas, who's appointed by the commission, and JCLO's appointment. I'm not sure that will work out.
Jerry, you and I have got decades in this Capitol. We have never seen a state Senate name an administrator of an agency, not only in any agency, but the Elections Commission. We have never seen this.
And Knutson's point was, why are they delaying the inevitable? You know, at some point, something's going to happen. So now we have March 2nd. They're going to come back and have this discussion again. What will happen then? Chair Mark Thompson, a Democratic appointee, has been very adamant
yeah.
that he believes Mike Haas is the interim administrator, that
yeah.
only the commission can remove him.
Right.
You know, for Haas, he's also got, we asked him about would he file a lawsuit because he was making $124,000 as the administrator. He's now down to $94,000 and change
as a staff counsel. Right.
But he still has a job.
Yes.
So the question becomes, are they really going to fight this and have push come to shove, and could there be any risk to Haas
right.
personally? Do they want to have this showdown with lawmakers? I mean, what's going to happen? I don't know. But we're going to find out in about a month.
Well, you mentioned Knutson and you mentioned Chair Thompson. Let's mm-hmm. listen to about a minute and a half. Dean Knutson arguing, we need an administrator. Let's begin a national search. Chair Thompson says, hold off. Chair Thompson wins. Vote was 4-2. Let's listen to that.
I would encourage the commission to move forward, to come together and recognize what's going to be best for the state is for us to begin a thorough, methodical, nationwide search for long-term leadership for the commission. Let's appoint an interim administrator with the knowledge that that individual could be replaced by the commission at any time. We have a diminishing window of time in order to exercise our statutory ability to appoint the leadership of the commission.
Why would anybody respond to a national search if they know tomorrow Mr. Fitzgerald or some other senator that wants to whisper to Mr. Fitzgerald that they're just gone because they don't like the results of an election? I think that we need to hear from the Senate on, you know, this never end their position that they don't have to confirm. They can wait 3 years to confirm. I mean, that's an absurd view of the law itself. I think if you're going to construe the law, and there's a 45 day timetable, that should apply to the Senate as well. And I think we just voted to maintain Mr. Haas up through April 30th. For those reasons, I would just ask that we table this motion, come back on March 1st or March 2nd, and stay the course and live with the decision that we made the other day.
And JR, a very important PS on this. Mm-hmm. Today, 11 former members, 11 former judges of the Government Accountability Board, which is now gone, blown up, issued this statement saying, hey, in the John Doe 1, John Doe 2, and they don't use the term John Doe 3,
yeah.
But they say, we did what we had a duty and an obligation to do. I just want to read three sentences from the press release. Talking about John Doe, local prosecutors presented information to the GAB indicating possible violations of state ethics and campaign finance laws, which the GAB had a legal duty to investigate. Sentence one. The settled law at that time, affirmed by Wisconsin court decisions and past opinions of both the GAB and its predecessor elections board, was that expenditures and activities by outside groups undertaken in coordination with candidate campaign committees were deemed to be political contributions subject to the limitations and reporting requirements of Wisconsin's campaign finance laws. And then the final sentence, the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision that ultimately terminated the second John Doe investigation significantly altered previous interpretations of the laws in question. 11 former judges who served on the GAB said, we followed the law as we knew it at that time. I just mm-hmm. find that very, very interesting.
And they're also welcoming the DOJ investigation if it's a fair one.
Well, has that, yes, this letter says that a DOJ investigation has been authorized at the GAB. Is that your understanding? Has it been signed off on, and is Schimmel vowed to do it?
My understanding is Fitzgerald asked them to do it, and they welcomed the opportunity. I'm not sure how the whole machination would work.
To be continued. Now we have a very serious debate in the Capitol over the 10 bills mm-hmm. that would change welfare and food stamps. Very interesting. First, let's go to the video. You have Speaker Voss outlining why it's needed. You have a Milwaukee mother saying, this would be an additional burden to me raising my six-year-old. And then you have an exchange between Senator Vinehound and Speaker Voss. Let's go to that video first.
The legislative package encourages personal responsibility for those receiving public benefits. The pilot program for earned income tax credits recipients will get dollars into people's pockets quicker and will work to improve their financial situation all throughout the year as opposed to only one period of time. The creation of savings accounts for medical assistance, typical to an HSA, will help individuals become wiser consumers and assist in becoming familiar with the basic concepts of commercial health insurance. Finally, requiring child support compliance as a condition for Medicaid will ensure that some of our most vulnerable children are being provided for, hopefully at the beginning and all the way through their teen years. These bills prevent fraud and abuse by ensuring that only those who are truly needy receive the benefits that are available to them. A photo ID on your Quest card for food share recipients will simply add an additional layer of fraud deterrence. We will also work to further improve the integrity of these important programs by putting forth certain asset limits for food share, Wisconsin Works, and Wisconsin Share. Together, these special session bills will once again make Wisconsin a leader in comprehensive welfare reform. Public assistance was never intended to be a permanent way of life.
My name is Bianca Shaw. I live in Milwaukee with my six-year-old daughter, Olivia. We live in Sherman Park, and I work full-time. Some legislators and the governor seem to be asking families like mine to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps. Well, I've picked myself up by my bootstrap time and time again. And I tell you that making the decision to break a generational cycle of poverty and work myself off of benefits is not as easy a task as you seem to think it is. I thought I was getting myself somewhere when I obtained a job that paid well above minimum wage, but my net monthly income was only $2,100 per month. I earned $374 too much for Wisconsin Share's child care, which left me to pay $1,100 per month in child care costs. Added to that, $150 for health care, plus $200 per month for food. So that supposedly good job that I received, it meant that I put myself in a position of having to choose between reliable transportation and quality child care. To legislators supporting these bills, I ask that you think about what it's like to have to choose between child care and transportation, even when you're working hard and full time. I ask that you think of Olivia. Think of her as your child. Think of me as your sister. We are one Wisconsin. We are responsible to one another. It is our responsibility to put in place the best and proven solutions, not ideas, that make it even harder for people like me who are already working so hard to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps.
What happens to farmers who have a bad crop, a hailstorm, and all of a sudden have way more bills than they have money to pay them? They need to go on food stamps, and their house is over $250,000 of the median when you throw in all the barns and everything else that they need to do their business. Because the way I understand that asset bill, they'd have to sell their farmstead in order to get food stamps. Can you tell me I'm wrong and where it is?
My understanding that in the proposal, it is 200% of the median home value, which I believe is $361,000. So for the vast majority of Wisconsinites, $361,000 is the number. Okay. Number two, it's my understanding that there is a provision in the bill that allows for the department to create those hardship exemptions. So the goal is to not take people who use it temporarily and not allow them to access the program or to make them sell their assets. The goal is to make sure that people are not frauding the system. So that's why we gave the flexibility to the department to actually promulgate those rules.
How do we know that, Speaker?
It's in the bill.
JR, that capital exchange pretty much said it all, but let's just go through some of the changes just narrowly for food stamps. Owners of homes worth, I saw your estimate, $321,000, and a car worth more than $20,000 would not be eligible. Require photos on food stamp cards to reduce the fraud. Require 30, not 20 hours of work or job training. And six of these special session bills would need waivers from the federal government. But I think Voss testifying in that very long hearing indicates this is something they're going to try to make a run at and passing in our very few days.
The Assembly Committee delayed exec that was planned for Thursday. It's going to happen on Tuesday instead. Chair Scott Krug told me it was because there were a couple of questions about some of the bills and work requirements. They want to have amendments that they could work on to really address, make sure everything works with what the federal rules are, what's going to happen, what qualifies. They want some clarifications, but there's definitely a Republican push to get these bills done. They think they're popular politically across the spectrum.
So. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about Foxconn a little bit because Racine asked to divert 7 million gallons a day on behalf of Mount Pleasant, site of the Foxconn developments. Now, this has some political ramifications, and you were telling me that the governor talked about this, so go ahead and...
Well, DOA put out, I saw a tweet, I think, from DOA that, yes, it's a big demand of water, but if you look historically with Racine, it's not out of whack, but Racine's lost businesses over the years. So I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but they're trying to make the case that it's historically not that big a deal, but use has been going down in the city between both the business sector and home sector.
And DNR's website on this issue said that Waukesha in 2016 got the approval to withdraw 8.2 million gallons a day. So again, but just the specifics quickly, Racine applied on behalf of Mount Pleasant. They want to draw down 7 million. Of that, 4.3 million gallons would be returned. DNR must approve the diversion, and as a public service, DNR is scheduled a March 7th public hearing on this diversion in Sturtevant. And looming out there is Foxconn has now submitted plans for three factories, including a glass factory, and that raises the specter of air emissions and other standards.
And environmentalists are still raising concerns that there's an issue here that they're worried about the draw, the impact on Lake Michigan, the environment in general.
Okay. Before we get to your stock picks, we've got some new faces in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Representative Greta Neubauer mm-hmm. is serving in the 66th. She was sworn in. GOP Representative Rick Gundrum sworn in the 58th. And Democratic Senator Patty Shockner mm-hmm. in the 10th Senate District. The state treasurer has announced he wants to run for Representative Coinga's seat.
Because he's running for the state Senate.
Because you and I heard a rumor he was going to run for state Senate, try to take out Doug La Follette. And Mr. La Follette has announced that he's going to seek an 11th term.
Yeah, I just reported this morning that Therese Brousseau is not going to seek re-election, Madison Democrat. The question is, with the retirements, is it the first of many or the first of a handful? And for Republicans, if it is a wave year and you know the president's numbers ticked up this week, the tax bill looked better in polling I saw, so you never know if that's a blip or if the dynamic has changed. But if Republicans are facing a wave or a difficult environment, more retirements they have, the harder it is to hold seats.
Right.
Brousseau's seat is very, very Democratic and one of the most Democratic in the state, so
absolutely.
That's all about the primary. But keep right. your eye on the retirements and swing seats, if any happen, because that could be an issue. The Rip seat, for example, is now in the Walker administration. That will be a target this fall.
It will. Okay, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So the rural agenda, Walker continued to talk this week about the $50 million fund he wants through
WEDIC. Announced in the State of the State.
Also, there was a vote in Assembly committee on this bill that would increase sparsity aid to rural small districts as well as the boost for low spending districts, not all of which are rural, but those are both moving along. There's a reason for that. Republicans realize that one, with the $50 million, if you steal that money going to Foxconn, you want to make sure that people know in other places we're still thinking of you. And two, as Republicans have struggled with suburbanites, they know that can do well in Madison and Milwaukee. You need the rural voters who have been there for you the last couple of weeks, like, to turn out.
Yep.
They need to know that you're still thinking about them. This could be part of that, a political benefit to doing these things.
Okay, that's a good call. Your rising involves some musical chairs.
So we had Dana Walk's campaign manager announce a week ago that he was leaving. I reported Monday first that Nathan Henry was leaving the Evers campaign as campaign manager. We have Mela Mitchell bringing on somebody new as a campaign manager. I think it was January 1. Keldo Roy's brought somebody new, and the one who was working with her actually had a prearranged job in Montana he's going back to. The really ones I'm kind of most interested in are Walks and Evers.
I agree.
With Walks, Jake Haju adopted a new son and want to stay home with him. There is a lot of talk in the Capitol that there's a mutually beneficial decision because Walks is struggling financially. Jake has a demand family. Let's be honest, having a new son and being in this job is not that easy. So there was a good reason for him to be home, but also it's one less person on the books in a campaign that is burning through cash quite quickly. Britta Olson is now moving up to campaign manager. They also another staffer leave and go back to Walks's Capitol office. So they're not going to replace those two jobs. It's a different race now than it was in August. These guys are getting in because it's a multi-candidate field. It's harder to raise money. It's just a different dynamic.
And I talked to a Dane County elected official who was very surprised at Nathan Henry's leaving the Evers campaign.
When I talked to folks, they described it as just not a good fit. Henry's background is a pollster. He's not run a campaign before. So when he was hired, it was like, okay, this is going to be interesting because he hasn't really run anything. How's this going to work? Again, the money aspect. Evers raised okay money, but was going through it. It's harder to have a full campaign staff right now with the resources these guys have. So the question becomes, okay, how do you find the money between now and June? At some point, they need to staff up.
Yeah.
They need to kind of have a more robust campaign. But Walks, he's still got eight staffers right now. Is that going to continue with the money stuff going on, or can they find resources?
Okay, and in the last minute, you're falling.
Food stamp caseloads. So Walker, the administration announced this week that 25,000 folks have found jobs because they participated in these new work requirements through food stamps. That announcement also included that some 84,000 cases and change of people who lost eligibility because they didn't qualify over a three-month period, which is when you get pushed off. Now, they're not all unique people. There are some cases where you were there, got pushed off, requalified, got pushed off again. But they're both factors in an overall drop in food stamp caseloads. There were, before the new requirement took effect and you started having people pushed off, there are like 794,000 people in change, so caseloads for food stamps. Right. We're down to 664 or 5,000 now, like as of December. It's not just these programs. You have an economy that's improving. You have a low unemployment rate. All those things help pull people out of government programs and off of them. That's what's going on, but there are factors you can't ignore in what's going on.
And this travels with the drug testing issue and the assets issue, mm-hmm. and we're going to get committee debate in the Assembly on this issue next Tuesday?
Yes.
The news goes on. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 2nd.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.